The topic of today's shiur or lecture is hishtadlus versus bitachon, effort versus trust in Hashem regarding shiduchim, livelihood, parnasa, yeshuos, salvations, different areas that we trust in the Almighty and we ask for His assistance. And it's a little bit controversial, which is probably why there's such a big crowd. But the question was, when is enough too much? How much is enough? How much is really considered as too much? In matters of spiritual needs, the Chayvus Halvavus says there is no such thing as too much. Chavis Avavis and Shara Bitochen says, in Mishtadol Adam B'chol Yecholtai, a person who puts out all of his effort, even to reach a level which is beyond his means, but if they put out all of their effort in matters of spirituality, of Ruchnius, Yazreyu Hashem La'asais Yoysim Yecholtai, the Almighty will help him that he will be able to accomplish even more than his capacity. So there you see clearly there is no limit to hishtadlus. There's no limit to effort. As much as you can put out, you should put out. What about in the physical realm? What about in the physical world? In livelihood, shidduchim, other matters. Is it the same thing? Should a person put out effort and keep putting and putting until they're exhausted? There's an expression in the non-Jewish world that says God helps those who help themselves. So maybe I have to just keep helping myself. I trust in the Almighty, I trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but I have to help myself. Okay, so how much do I have to help myself? I could work from 9 to 5, I could work from 8 to 6, I could work from 7 to 10, who knows? Where does it draw the line? How much do I recognize and internalize that the Almighty is the one who orchestrates all events in my life? I have to make hishtadlus. I have to put forth effort. Maybe the effort is only to hide the open miracle of HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrating events of the world. And then I only have to put out minimal effort. Or maybe not. Maybe really I have to put out a lot of effort. What does the Torah tell us? Well, the Torah tells us in one place, we know psukim that we say all the time, V'yosafta digonecho, we say it in Kriyishma, two or three times a day, you will gather in your grain. You'll gather your grain, you'll gather your produce of the field, your wine, your oil. Well, it's your grain. That means that you have to plant it. That means you have to make an effort. Clearly, Rabban Shlom says, I will reward your effort. Also the Torah says, Uverachticha b'chol asher taseh. Hashem promises, I will bless you in all that you do. Seems clear that a person has to make effort. But how much effort? How much effort is the minimum? Is there such a thing as maximum? Is there such a thing as doing too much effort? Is it detrimental to put in too much hishtadlus? Let's see what the Torah teaches us. We're learning now, we just read the parasha of Yosef HaTzadik, Miketz. We know that Yosef was put into jail under erroneous charges. He was there. While he was there, he met the Sara Mashkim, the Sara Oifim, he met the butler, he met the wine, the baker. They each had dreams. Yosef interpreted their dreams. To the baker, he said that he would die. To the wine steward, he told him that he would be once again put back in his position to bring wine to Paro. And he made a request. He made a request of the wine steward. He said that when you will be taken out and you will be returned to your position of power, I ask of you a favor. Remember the kindliness that I have done for you, and you should make mention of my name, Zichartani, remember me, Vihiskartani, and mention of me to Paro, because I'm being brought up on false charges. So get me out of prison, make mention of me to Paro. And the Torah tells us at the end of Pashas Vayeshev, V'loi zochah sar hamashkin es Yosef, that the wine steward did not remember Yosef. More than that, Vayishkocheyu, and he forgot him. Two things. V'loi zochah es sar hamashkin, he didn't remember him. The sar hamashkin didn't remember him, means he didn't make mention of him. Vayishkocheyu, when he actually forgot about Yosef, which is an oddity. Man just saved your life, or certainly gave you direction that your life would be saved. He didn't ask you that much. He told you he was up on false charges. Make mention of me to Paro, and he forgot him. Torah doesn't tell you that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it doesn't tell you that he was a mean person, rather, that the Egyptian was a mean person and didn't want to do Yosef a favor. Torah says, Vayishkocheyu, he forgot him, which is, seems to be unnatural. We are familiar with Rashi, which brings the Medrash. The Medrash says that there's a pasuk in Tehillim. The pasuk in Tehillim says, Ashrei mi, asher sam Hashem miftachoi. David HaMelech tells us, fortunate is the one who places Hashem as his trust, v'loi pone el rehovim, and he doesn't turn to the arrogant ones, which Chazal tell us means, in this case, the Egyptians, Mitzrim. Ashrei mi asher sam Hashem miftachoi, fortunate is the one who places his trust, or who places Hashem as his trust, sam Hashem, he places Hashem, miftachoi, his trust, v'loi pone el rehovim. He doesn't turn towards the arrogant ones, meaning his focus is directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Medrash, Zu Yosef HaTzadik. This refers to Yosef. Mikivan Sha'amar, because he said two words, Kiyim Zchartani V'Hiskartani, because he said two words to the Saramashkim, remember me and mention me to Paro, Nitoisef Lo Shtei Shonim, he remained another 2 years in prison. Hence the parsha, Miketz Shlasayim Yomim, the beginning of Shonim, the beginning of this past week's parsha, 2 more years that Yosef stayed in jail. He stayed in jail for two words. The two words that he said to the Saramashkim, Schartani, remember me, the Hiskartani, and make mention of me to Pare when you get out. The Medrash is a wonder. If the Medrash says, Ashrei mi asher sam Hashem miftachoi, fortunate is the one who places his trust in Hashem, Zu Yosef HaTzadik, David HaMelech was referring to Yosef HaTzadik. Wow, Yosef had great emunah and great betachin, he trusted in the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then the Medrash continues, because he said two words that he shouldn't have said, Zchartani v'Hiskartani, he remained 2 years more in prison. Oh, so he didn't have enough betachin, right? Because he was punished. He remained 2 years, right? But Ashrei mi asher sam Hashem, you want to know who is the epitome, who is the apex, who is the example for us of trust in Hashem? Yosef. He said two words. Medrash doesn't... There's a lack of clarity here from the beginning of the Medrash to the end of the Medrash. The Beis Halevi explains like this. How much bitachin? Limitless. A person should have limitless bitachin. How much is shtadlus? How much effort should a person make in this world? Well, let's think about it philosophically. If we truly understand that the world only exists as the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that it should be. This world does not exist outside of the will of Hashem. The world is not something that the Almighty created and stands back and watches and observes. Not even something that He involves Himself in from time to time. But according to the way the Rambam explains it, the world exists only because it is the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that it should be. At every second, at every millisecond, there is a positive will from the Ribbono Shel Olam that the world should exist. The Eibush does not exist, so the world exists. If the Ribbono Shel Olam for one moment would stop willing the world to exist, it wouldn't explode, it wouldn't implode, bleep, it would fade. Like pulling the plug on an image, on a projected image, it would just fade, it wouldn't be there. So the world exists because it is the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that it should be. If we understand that in its depth, we understand that it's not possible for anything to be outside of the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You and I exist because He's willing us at every moment to exist. We can lift our arms because He wills us positively to lift our arms. We can speak, we can eat. Even inanimate objects only exist because it is the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that it should be. So tell me, do you have to work for your livelihood? Do you need to go out and work? If the world only exists because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it to exist, turn to the Almighty and say, please, Master of the Universe, I would like breakfast. Can I have breakfast? And breakfast would be there. If we understand it at its depth, and we relate to it, they tell over the famous story of the Chozer Milublin. The Chozer Milublin, every morning used to eat his breakfast. One morning he told the person who was Meshamas, and he said to him, listen, I'm uncomfortable sitting down to breakfast. I come home and there's a plate of food waiting for me. Give me a few moments to daven and to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to beseech Him for something to eat, and then you'll bring out the plate of food. So the shaman said, okay, for sure. Chayzim Leblin comes home after davening. He sits down by his table. He lifts his eyes heavenward. He turns his hands up and he says, Master of the universe, you are the Zonu Mefarnes Lakol. You give satiation to all living creatures. Please, large creatures, small creatures, nothing. Your Pesach is Yodecho Umasbi Alachol Chai Rotzoin. Please sustain me too and give me something to eat for breakfast. And that was the cue, and the shamus would come out with a plate of food and he'd put it down in front of the Chayzim Leblin, who would of course make his proper brachas, and he would eat his breakfast. This went on for quite some time, and this shamus said to himself one day, you know what, this is not real, this is the joke. He said, Hashem, give me breakfast, and that's my cue, and I come out from behind the curtain, you know, the Wizard of Oz, and I bring out a plate of food and I put it down in front of him. This is not right. Tomorrow morning when he goes through this play of his, I'm not going to bring out the food. And when he calls to me and says, my breakfast, I'll say, oh, you want breakfast? So ask me, what's this business with saying, Hashem, give me a plate of food for breakfast, right? That was his plan. The next morning, the Chayza gets up, goes early, goes to shul. On the way to shul, a Jew runs up to him and he says, Rebbe, you must help me. And the Chayza says, what's wrong? He says, my wife is deathly ill. She's had fever now for 3 days. I don't know what kind of illness that was. But the doctor said if she has one more day of fever, if the fever doesn't break today, then she will unfortunately expire, she will pass away, she will die. Please, Rebbe, daven that she should have a refuah shleima. We know the story, right? You heard it on the tape, right? You didn't hear it on the tape? So the Chayza says, okay, what's her name? What's your wife's name? What's her mother's name? Fine. He goes off to shul, the Chayza davens, and he davens this woman should have a refuah shleima. And after davening, he stays longer, and he says tehillim, and he davens this woman should have a speedy recovery, and he heads back home. He goes home, he comes into his house, he sits by his table, he turns his eyes heavenwards, he says, Master of the universe, you are Zonim, and Farnes, Lakol, your Pesachas, Yodecho, Masbia, Lakol, Chai, Rotzain. You sustain every living creature and give it according to its will and according to its need. Please have mercy and compassion on me too, and give me also something to eat. And the shamus is in the kitchen with his arms folded. He's not coming out with no plate of food till he gets. All of a sudden, there's a knock at the door. Shamus goes to the door, he opens up the door. The man that the Chayza met in the morning on the way to shul runs into the Chayza, falls down in front of him on his knees, and he says, Rebbe, I can't thank you enough. While you were in shul davening for my wife, her fever broke, and the doctor said that she would live. I am so grateful to you. To show you my appreciation, I brought you a plate of food for breakfast. So you tell me, who is the Zonim Mefarnes Lakol? So if we understand it and we relate to it like the Chayza did, and we know the Rabbanu Shlom gives us to breathe at every second of every living moment, so why do you have to make a shtadlus at all? Why do I have to go to work 9 to 5? Why don't I just go to shul, daven, open up a gemara, sit and learn, do my chesed, do my mitzvahs, limud haTorah, and parnasa will come? Explains the Beis Halevi. We are not born perfected. We are not born with our midos perfected, with our hashkafos, our philosophy perfected. We are not born with our yerushimayim, our fear of heaven, and our understanding of the Almighty. We're not born perfected. And the Torah allows a person to develop over a lifetime. Not an entire lifetime. Maybe some people can get faster. But to work and to develop. Just like we know that Chazal teach us, mitach shaloi lishma ba lishma, engage in mitzvahs, even if it's not totally for the sake of heaven, because from that you will accustom yourself to do mitzvahs, and eventually you'll do it for the sake of heaven. You'll learn Torah for the sake of heaven. You have to get used to it. It's a process. Faster for some, slower for others. Explains the Beis Halevi that hishtadlus, effort, is a sliding scale with our level of bitachon. The Torah requires that a person ultimately reach a level in their lifetime that they walk step in sync with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I know and I relate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides me all of my needs, large and small. In fact, to the Almighty there is no such thing as large and small. Whatever need I have, I turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and I ask Him for what I need, and the Rabbanu Shlom helps. And I have the tochen and trust that He will help me. How much hishtadlus do I have to make? That depends on my level of bitachon, explains the Beis Halevi. When I start out in life, and I'm growing, and I'm developing, and I'm internalizing, and I'm realizing that I exist only by the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that I can walk in sync with Him, so to speak, So then, in the beginning, I need more effort. My bitachon is not complete. I would be fooling myself if I said, oh, my bitachon is complete. So I need ishtadlus. I need effort. I need some work. Because the effort covers up the great miracle of the bitachon that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for me. Effort, work, covers up the great miracle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sustains me. Right? A person can do a lot of work and nebuch not be matzliach. Some people do very little work and they're very matzliach. What's the difference? And you think it's their smarts? How many people do we know that are so smart and unfortunately parnasa doesn't go easy for them? And how many people do we know that shlamazels, but they have mazel? They have mazel? I don't know. Is it mazel? Is it bitachin? Do we know what's cooking in their hearts? It's a sliding scale. The more emunah and bitachin that a person has and trusts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides him everything, the less effort he needs to put out. He only needs to plant one seed, and don't worry, things will grow. The less bitachin that a person has, if they're not there yet, they're still working on it, then they need to supplement their bitachon with hishtadlus, with effort, otherwise it's an open miracle. If it's an open miracle, it compromises our trust in Hashem, our belief in Hashem. If man would fall outside your door every day, how much of a challenge would it be to believe in the Rabbani Shlomo or not believe in the Rabbani Shlomo? You didn't develop that on your own. Our free will, our free choice became compromised. I opened up my door, man falls every day. Those who lived in the Midbar for 40 years, their free choice was compromised, which is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu dealt with them so severely that in the stakes that they made, they lost the Dor Deya, they lost their Olam Haba. The generation that received Torah lost their Olam Haba. Because to them it was so clear, externally, because they experienced HaKadosh Baruch Hu so clearly that to them even a small failing was considered a big failing. If man would fall outside my door, my free choice would be compromised. So I've got to work on it myself. I have to eventually come to a place to know that whatever I need, Shidduchim, Parnasa, Yeshua, Sefus, whatever it is, I talk about Parnasa but it means anything, comes from the Rabbani Shalom. How much effort should I put into it? Depends on my level of bitachon. The more bitachon, the less effort. The less bitachon, the more effort. And the Beis Halevi goes on and he says, the punishment, the consequences for someone who really has great bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and should make minimal hishtadlus, but does more than the minimal and maximizes his hishtadlus, or does more than he should, his punishment is that he needs the hishtadlus. The punishment is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu draws back the Siyata Dishmaya, draws back the divine providence, and the person actually does need more effort in order to reach the same goal. One more time. A person who's on a high level of bitachon and needs minimal effort, minimal hishtadlus, but he has a momentary lapse, and puts out more effort than they should, then the Rabbani Shalom tries to teach them a lesson by making it necessary for that extra hishtadlus. Yosef HaTzadik said two words. My gosh, what did he say? Think about it. Really, in an editorial form, what he said to the Tsar HaMashkin was, listen here, guy, the only reason you ended up in prison was to get me out. I'm telling you a world's perspective. This is what, he didn't say these words, or maybe he did. Kind of did. But he said, the reason you're here is to get me out of prison. So make sure when you leave, you do your job, right? You're only here as the means to get me out. So when you get out, Zichartani, Vehizkartani, do what you were destined to do and get me out of prison. Is there anything bad with that? Is there anything wrong with that? He trusted in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He knew the Rabbani Shalom would take him out. All he did was is that he foresaw, he understood the picture here. Samashkin ended up in prison, Washington ended up in prison, a fly flew into the cup. That's a happenstance. It's a random. No, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrated it, so he should end up in prison. End up in prison with him. We'll have a dream. We'll talk about the dream. He'll get out and he'll get him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized, Yosef realized this is what it is. So he said to him, when you get out, make mention of me. Remember me, make mention of me to Paro. For Yosef HaTzadik, who had such great bitachon and understood that this is the hand of the Rabbani Shalom, those were two words too many. For him, those were two words too much. If Yitaka understood that the Rabbani Shalom was orchestrating events to take you out of the prison, then why'd you say anything? Just be quiet. Let things happen. Interpret the dream properly And the Sara Mashkin will eventually get out of prison, and when he gets out of prison, he'll mention you to Paroi, because Paroi is going to have a dream, and he's going to need an interpreter, and so on and so forth, like we saw in this week's Parsha, right? For Yosef HaTzadik, for us, that would not be a crime. For Yosef, those were two words too much. And because of that, he was punished. He stayed 2 years extra in prison. Says the Beis Halevi, that's what the Medrash means. David HaMelech says, Ashrei mi asher sam Hashem miftachai, fortunate is the one that Hashem, that places Hashem as his trust. Who is that? That's Yosef. Yosef was the epitome of trust in Hashem. How do you know? Because when he slipped up once, and he had a momentary lapse for a moment, and he said two words, that's all he said. And in the two words he understood, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was orchestrating events, but he said two words to the Sara Mashkin, remember me and make mention of me, he was punished to taste 2 years more in prison. Such midas hadin, why? The answer is, because he was on such a high level of betochen and understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's orchestrating events of the world, that he ought not to have said even those two words. Can you hear this? For him, it was two words too much. Let's play it out a little bit more to see where it could take us. There was a Talmud of the Chofetz Chaim. Everybody knows the story with the Munkacher Rebbe, you know, the Munkacher passport? The Munkacher passport, the famous story. The Munkacher Rebbe, when he was leaving, before the war, when he was escaping from Nazi Germany, that passports to get out, you have to show your passports at the crossroads. When it came to the border guards, and the German soldiers demanded to see the passport, the Munkacher Rebbe took out a paper from his pocket, he gave it to the Shamas, he told the Shamas to take it out and bring it to the border guard. He gave it to the border guard, he opened it up, he read it, took a stamp, stamped it, gave it back to the Shamas, Shamas gave it back to the Munkacher Rebbe, and they crossed over the border. Before the Shamas gave it back to the Munkacher Rebbe, he looked at the passport, at the visa, the papers, his papers, whatever it was, the papers, traveling papers. It was a blank sheet of paper. The Munkacher Rebbe gave him a blank sheet of paper. And he said to the Rebbe, a blank sheet of paper, and the Nazi stamped it. He told him, Ein oid milvadoi. There is nothing other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As the Rambam explains, everything in the world is only the will of the Almighty. If you connect to the will of the Almighty, there's nothing that becomes impossible. There is nothing that exists other than God in the world. If you connect and you believe firmly, Ein oid milvadoi, then there's nothing that's impossible. And at the moment that I gave you the paper, I davened to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam that he should see it as a... Thank you so much. That he should see it as a visa. And that's exactly what happened. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nehiyeh bedvareich. I heard this story from someone who heard it from Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, who Rav Shmuel Birnbaum heard it from this Jew himself, Rav Yitzchak Horowitz. Rav Yitzchak Horowitz was a Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim, he was Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim, and when the war broke out, he looked at what was happening around him and he realized that the unnatural success of Hitler, Yimach Shemai, was so supernatural that such a person should rise to power and a country which was known for its Gemütlichkeit should all of a sudden become bloodthirsty and so on and so forth, and the success they were having, he perceived this as the Yad Hashem, which we know it was, whether we like it or not, whether we understand it or not, he perceived it as the hand of the Almighty, as the Yad Hashem. And he said, because this is so clearly the Yad Hashem, he took upon himself not to make any extraordinary effort to save himself. He would go with the flow. He wasn't running to give himself up. He would go with the flow, but he wasn't going to make extra hishtadlus. He was going to put his work in bitachon and trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not in extra physical hishtadlus. And this is what he did. He survived for a number of years in the forest. So once he had an accident, he cut his foot. He ended up getting an infection. Because he got an infection, he couldn't walk very well. He got caught, and he was taken to one of the camps. I don't know which one it was. As he was taken into the camp, and he was put on the line of selectia. At the head of the line was Dr. Mengele Yimach Shmai V'Zichroi, who was looking at each individual, determining whether he should be sent to the line of the work camp or the line of Chas V'Shalom Maves. He knew that if he would limp as he got up to Dr. Mengele, he would immediately send him to the death line because he wasn't a good worker. So a couple of people before him, as he got closer and closer to Mengele, he strengthened himself, he made himself walk upright, and he put his foot down as he was walking normally with excruciating pain, and he walked by Dr. Mengele standing upright with strength. Mengele looked at him. He sent him, okay, go. Sent him to the work line. He went on to the work line. He got onto the work line. He said, "Oy vey, what did I do? I made a promise I would put myself over totally and trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I made an extra hishtadlus. I made an extra effort. I faked it and made myself look different than I really was. And that was an extra effort that I should not have done." Now, I'm sure if he would have asked anybody in the line who was a Talmud Chacham, they would have told him, "Just stay right here. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to save you in this way. Stay right here." But he didn't. He said, "I didn't do what I promised I would do." He went out of the work line and went back onto the line of selectia. I heard this from the person who heard it from Shmuel Birnbaum, who heard it from him. He went back onto the selectia line, and this time when he got by Mengele, he limped as he was limping normally because of his foot infection. Mengele looked at him limping. He said, "On this line," and sent him over to the death line. He was waiting there in that line. I don't understand why, I don't have the details of it, but somehow that day there were Red Cross workers in that camp. And a Red Cross worker came up to him and said, "Why are you limping?" He says, "I have an infection in my foot." He says, "Oh, I can help you, come with me." And he took him and put him on a truck with some other Yidden who also needed medical care, and drove him off to a hospital where they kept him for 2 months treating the infection in his foot until the infection got better. After 2 months, they brought him back to the concentration camp. I guess that's what the Red Cross had to do. They brought him back to the concentration camp. He got online again for selectia. Dr. Mengele looked at him, looked strong, looked healthy, walked well, sent him over to the work line. He ended up back on the work line where he started off l'chatchila, where he started off in the first place. 2 or 3 weeks later, the Allies were closing in on that concentration camp, and the Germans instituted their famous death march, where they took all of the concentration camp people and marched them back into behind the German lines. They marched them for days and days and days without rest. Whoever fell, whoever stumbled, whoever stopped to rest was rewarded with a bullet in the head, and they moved on to take all of the Yidden back deeper into behind the German lines. This Yid, Reb Yitzchak Horowitz, survived. He survived the death march. But he said clearly, had he stayed on the work line the first time, he would have survived in the work camp, but when it came time for the death march, he would not have made it. There was no way he could walk with that infection in his foot, and he would have been killed. But because he put his emunah and betochen in the Rabbeinu Shalom, and said, "Totally, I trust in you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so much so, I'm going to rectify the mistake that I made and get back online," for that he was zeicha, that he remained and he lived to survive and to talk about it. I'll tell you another story. This story you won't find printed anywhere. I have to try to say it short because we have to get to the other half of the shir about what happens if you make too much ishtadlus. But just to give you an example, there was a Yid in Yerushalayim, a neighbor of Rabbi Yashiv Zolgizonsai, whose daughter became a kalah. He made up the shidduch that between him and the chassan side, they each would give $25,000 to start off this young couple. And that's the minig, and that's how they do things in Eretz Yisrael. And if you don't come up with the money, very often the shidduch breaks. So, he promised $25,000. Where was this Yerushalayim Yid going to get $25,000? He had no idea. But that's it. He had to promise it. He promised it. The other side promised it. He promised it. Time went on. It was getting closer and closer to the chasana. And he wasn't raising the money. And his wife said to him, Yanko, whatever his name was, you need to go raise the money. And he says, "Where am I going to raise the money?" She says, you know what everybody does. You go to America, you get a green card, or whatever card you get, whatever city you go to, and you have to collect money. So he says, "Listen here, I was born in Eretz Yisrael. I never left Eretz Yisrael. I'm not leaving Eretz Yisrael now." She says, "But you have to, for the chasana, you have to." He says, "I trust that the Rabbani Shalom, I have betochen, full trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he'll take care of us." The wife says, "I also have full trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But you have to make an effort, right? You have to make a hishtadlus, you have to put forth an effort." He says, "Listen, I'm not leaving Eretz Yisrael, I have full betochen in the Rabbani Shalom." She didn't know what to do, time was going on, she was tearing the hair out of her head. She went to her next door neighbor, Rebbetzin Eliashiv, and she said, "Listen, here's the story. We have to come up with $25,000. My husband refuses to go to America to raise it." She says, "Let me talk to my husband." She goes and talks to Eliashiv. Eliashiv says, "Oi, the shidduch might break. He has to do everything he can do. I'll call him in. He sends for him to come. He wishes him a mazel tov on the simcha. His daughter's engaged. He says, listen, I understand you have to raise $25,000. He says, yeah. He says, so listen, so what are you going to do? He says, Achot B'tochen Rebbe, I have trust. The Rebbeinu Shlom Etelfen. He says, you're right. The Rebbeinu Shlom will help. But you need to make some hishtadlus. You have to do something, you know. Mom doesn't fall outside the door. He says, what should I do? He says, you should go to America and raise money. He says, Rebbe, I was born in Yerushalayim. I never left Eretz Yisrael. I'm not leaving Eretz Yisrael. I refuse. I have been talking to Eibishter is going to help. He says, but you have to make an effort. He says, I'm not leaving Eretz Yisrael. I trust in the Eibishter. He says, but you need to make an effort. Do something. He says, what am I going to do if I go to America? I don't even know anybody in America. He says, you must know somebody. He says, nobody. I don't know anybody. I have nowhere to go. He says, maybe you know somebody who knows somebody in America. Know somebody, knows the menial of my school, the principal of the school in which he teaches. He goes to America every year, where he used to teach. He goes to America every year, and he collects money for the cheder. He knows people in America. Ah, oh, Rabbi Yasha says, Givaldik, go to him, get a list of names, and you'll have people that you can go to. Okay? Rabbi Yasha says so. He paskins, you're paisik, you gotta do what he says. He goes to the menial of the school, and he says to listen, needs money in America, this man needs a list of names. He says, no problem. He gives him a list of 10 names. Guy takes the 10 names. He goes home. His wife is packing a bag. He says, what are you doing? She says, I'm packing a bag. You're going to America. He says, I'm not going to America. What do you mean not going to America? But Yashim told you. He says, I have to make a hishtadlus. I'm not leaving Eretz Yisrael. I have full betochen that the Rebbeinu Shlom is going to help us. But Rabbi Yashim said, you have to make a hishtadlus. He says, yes. And who said what the hishtadlus is? He told you names from America. He says, you're right. I'm going to write a letter to the first name on the list, and I'm going to ask him for help. She says, you're going to write a letter to the first name on the list? Not even to all 10? He says, I trust in the Eibishter. I have to make a hishtadlus, right? Shouldn't be a miracle. So I'm making a hishtadlus. There was no talking to him. He wrote a letter. He sent it off to America. You know this wouldn't be a story unless the ending was exactly what you heard. Did I tell you this story once before? He got back the letter with a check for $25,000. Lekovid dechasna, dear so-and-so, thank you for giving me the opportunity. Here's $25,000. His wife went running to Rebbe Tzalel Eliashiv. It was Givaldik, it was Purim, it was Hanukkah, it was a wonderful simcha. She told Rebbe Eliashiv. Eliashiv called the yid in. He said to him, I have to tell you, there's no question in my mind, the reason that you got this check is because you have full emuna and betochen in the Rebbeinu Shlolem, and you see it, this is mamish, this is hashgoche pratis, it's not shayach, it's unbelievable, and it's only because of your full emuna and your betochen in the Rebbeinu Shlolem. Nevertheless, the principal of this school did you a big favor by giving you a list of names of great philanthropists. You need to thank him. She said, oh, he's going to do that right away. He calls up the principal. He tells him, listen, I want to thank you. I wrote a letter to Mr. So-and-so, and he sent me $25,000, and I'm very grateful to you. He says, what? I'm coming right over. He runs over to the house, says, I have to see the check. Shows him the check. He says, I can't believe it, I can't believe it. My mom can't believe it. You wrote a letter, you just wrote one letter. I can't believe it, I can't. He says, what do you mean you can't believe it? You gave me a list of names. He says, the names that I gave you, you think I'm going to give you my good donors? I gave you my $5, $10 donors. I'm not going to give you my big donors, Meshuga. This guy gives me $10 every year. I can't believe he gave $25,000. He says, listen, that's what he gave. Okay, fine. A month later, this Manayo goes to America to collect money for his cheder. Who do you think the first stop is on his list? He goes to this guy, he goes to his office, and he says to me, a donation. So he says, oh yeah, he says, you remember me? He says, yeah, you're from the cheder in Yerushalayim. He says, yeah, okay. So writes him a check for $10, he gives him a check for $10. Looks at the check, he says, is this it? He says, yeah, that's, I think I give you that every year, right? $10, no? He says, I thought maybe you'd give a little bit more. He says, no, that's what I can give. He says, I thought maybe you came into some money this year. He says, no, no, everything's the same. He says, okay, look, I got to ask you. He says, you gave a check for $25,000 to Yankel who was making a chasna for his daughter. You don't even know him. He sent you a letter. He says, how do you know about that? No one's supposed to know about that. He says, because he told me about it. I gave him your name. She says, look, let me tell you what happened. He says, many, many years ago, my wife and I, we married. We tried to have children for a number of years. We couldn't have children. 5 years, 10 years, so many years went by. The doctors told us it was not possible for us to have children. We went for brachas, we davened to the Eibishter, we begged by the Eibishter, and a neis happened. A siyata d'shmaya neis. The doctors are still talking about it, how it happened, but my wife became pregnant. Another time, we'll talk about what, but it was mshulik, it was written up in medical journals. But his wife became pregnant. But the doctors told us, this is it. It's a one-time shot, it's a one-time nest, not going to happen again. We were so excited, we were so elated on the day that she was born, that we found out this news. I said, oh, on the day that she's born, he went and he opened up a bank account. It was a girl. He opened up a bank account, and he's putting away money, a few dollars every week from his paycheck. She's going to have a chasana that's going to be a zensan, a zelchana. It's going to be so wonderful and so mamish gevaldik, because this is our only daughter. And he did, and we saved up for it, we saved up for it, we saved up for it. When our daughter turned 19 years old, unfortunately, she was stricken with a malady. We went to a number of different doctors till we found out it was a very rare type of cancer, and there was no cure. Many hospitals, many doctors, there was no cure. We were ready to give up hope. We were davening to the Rabbani Shalom, asking for refuah shleima. I remember that somebody came to us and said that there's the Mayo Clinic in Rochester has an experimental protocol for dafka, this kind of illness, and maybe it's worth it for you to find out if you're a candidate. We decided we're going to make the effort. We're going to do it. And I made a neder that day. I made a vow. I said, Rabbani Shalom, if you will give our daughter back to us, you'll give her a full shalima. I promise that any monies that we have saved up for her chasana, we'll give to marry off a poor kala. We'll give it for Achnasas Kala. We're going to give it to marry off a poor kala. Vos et zayim with our own daughter, we'll worry about it. But we're going to give this money for Achnasas Kala, which everybody knows is a school for refuah shleima. They went off to the Rochester, to the Mayo Clinic, and they went through the experimental procedure. It was over a 6-month period of time that she was treated, and they seemed everything was going good, and that she was in recession, that the illness was in remission. And then the day came, they got an envelope, a big yellow envelope from the Mayo Clinic, and like attached to the envelope was like an aerogram. I'm not sure if you're old enough, don't admit if you are, to know what an aerogram is, but there was an aerogram stuck to the envelope like the postman ate jelly sandwich in the morning and left some jelly on it. They opened up the big yellow envelope, and sure enough, inside was a letter from the Mayo Clinic informing them of the good news that she was in total remission, she was cured, they have nothing to worry about, shel Baruch Hashem live. And Tisha B'Av became Chag HaPurim, and it was simcha and joy and singing, and they were dancing, it was so nice. And then they took this aerogram that was like kind of attached to this letter, and they opened it up and they read it. It was a letter from a Yidden Eretz Yisrael that they never met, that they didn't know who it was, saying that he had a daughter that he had to marry off, and that he needed $25,000 in order to be able to make the wedding happen, in order that shidduch should happen. And my wife turned to me, and my wife said to me, you remember? We made a neder. We're not wealthy people. We're simple people. But we put away money, and we made a neder that the money that we put away, we would use for Achnasas Kala. Is this not min hashamayim, a sign from heaven that we... I went to check in the bank account. I don't know if it was exact or not exact, but there were $25,000 there. We wrote a check and we sent it off to him. My Rabbi Sai, betochen, trust in the Rabbi Nishalayla. Miraculous from the way we perceive it. But here are two families that never met each other. Two girls. One needed a shidduch, one needed a refuah. They would never know each other, never meet each other. But each family had betochen and put trust in the Rabbi Nishalayla, and everything is prepared to orchestrate such events. If you put your trust in the Rabbi Nishalayla, then the Rabbi Nishalayla, there's no limits to what he does. Hishtadlus, effort. Hishtadlus is there to supplement what betochen needs. The hour is late. I don't know where to move to fit in over here. Here's a quick kasha. If you follow it, good. Yaakov Avinu, when he prepared to meet Esav, he separated the camp. He divided the camp. He put half the children in one camp, half the children in the other camp. And he said, he'll attack one, the other one will escape. You all remember that, right? Okay, you remember your Chumash, right? And then when he finally meets up with Esav, he divides the children up to their mothers, to Rachel, to Leah, and the Shvachas. And Esav says, who are these? He says, these are the children that Hashem gave me. And each of the children were there with their mothers. 1 second. Pukes took him back and said, Yaakov divided up and made two camps. Each camp was a day's travel from the other, remember? So that if he hits one camp, the other camp will escape. And now, all of a sudden, the few took him later, here we are, and Yaakov's got all his kids together, divided up amongst their mothers, and Esav says, who are these? He says, these are the children that Hashem gave me. And all the children are there. What happened? Good kasha, you ever think about it? It's an eisen kasha. The answer is, when Yaakov prepared himself to meet Esav, he prepared for what? Milchama, for war, Dairon, to appease him with a gift, and the third thing was, Tefillah, he davened. Once he davened to the Rabbi Nishalalam, he trusted the Rabbi Nishalalam will help him, he pulled the kids back together again. Before he davened, he prepared like you prepare like a general. He divided them into two camps. He'll hit one camp, the other camp will go away. But once he davened to the Rabbi Nishalalam and he strengthened his emunah and betachon in the Eibishto, he put both camps back together again. They tell the story of the Brisky Rav. The Brisky Rav, during the war, when he was in Eretz Yisrael, and they were bombing Reb Beryl, his son, Reb Beryl Soloveitchik, came to his father, the Brisky Rav, and told him, Papa, come, we have to go into the bomb shelter. The Brisky Rav told him, we have to go into the bomb shelter. For here, I'm here, the Rebbe Nishalom will take care of, watch him. Papa, it's Sakonis Nefashis, it's a danger, there are bombs are falling, you have to go. He says, the Rebbe Nishalom will take care of me here as he takes care of me anywhere else. He says, Tati, Sakonis Nefashis, the Rambam says, Nechonis Nefashis, a person could even be Mechal Shabbos. He says, okay. So he went downstairs. Everybody's listening to the radio, everybody's trying to hear where the movements, the Jordanian soldiers are coming closer to him. Where are they? What's going on? It comes late at night, everybody's still anxious and they're worried and what's going to happen. And the Brisky Rav is getting undressed and putting on his pajamas. Brisky Rav was a person that we know seemed to have a nervous temperament. And here he is when everybody's all nervous and he's getting into his pajamas to go to bed. So his son comes up to him and he says to him, Tata, what are you doing? Everybody is nervous. Spilkis, who knows, the Jordanians could be right outside. We're in danger and you're going to bed. You're putting on your pajamas and going to bed. So his father says to him, David HaMelech says in Capital Gimel, Mizma LaDavid Bevarcha Mipnei Avshalom B'noi, David HaMelech says, when he was running away from his son Avshalom, he says, people say, look at all the tzaras that are coming upon me, nothing is going to help me, Ein Yishuas Elei Belekim. And David HaMelech says, Va'an Ato Hashem Mogem Ba'adi, Rabbi Nishalem, I know that you are my shield, Kvaydi Umeirim Raishi, my glory, and you lift up my head, Kaili El Hashem Ekra, I lift up my voice to Hashem, Vayaneu mehar kodshei sela, and he answers me from his holy mountain. Ani shochavti, I lie down, Voishana, and I go to sleep. Ki hakitzaisi, you wake me up. I will arise again. Ki Hashem yismacheni, because Hashem supports me. Said the Brisky Rav, why does David HaMelech say, Ani shochavti voishana? I lie down and I go to sleep. Just say, I go to sleep because I trust in Hashem. What does it mean? I lie down and he said, David HaMelech, put on his pajamas. Okay, maybe he didn't put on his pajamas. But he was so trusting in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shochavti, I lie down, I go to bed. Not I fall asleep in anguish or in anxiety. What's happening? The Jordanian soldiers, Avshalom is going to kill me. Shochavti, I lie down, Vayishana, and I go to sleep. Why? Because I know, Ki Hashem Yismacheni, because Hashem supports me. That is the taich of a person who has emunah and betochen. After the bombing raid, they went upstairs, and in the Brisky Rav's bedroom, his bed was smashed. A bomb had fallen through the ceiling. It was a dud, Baruch Hashem, it didn't explode, but it smashed his bed to smithereens. And his son, Reb Beryl Soloveitchik, said to his father, Nu zes, Tata? Huh? You see, father? See what would have happened if you would have been in the bed? Brisky Rav looked at him, he says, what? You owe me money for my bed. Because of you, my bed was destroyed. If I would have been in the bed, nothing would have happened. And because of you, now I have no bed. Right? This is the way that the Brisky Rav looked at it. I got to get to the other side, but I want to tell you something about Shidduchim. Can we run a few minutes over time? I must tell you this about Shidduchim, then you'll hear the opposite. It's important to hear the opposite, but Shidduchim is very important. The Mishnah in Tainis says that Shimon Gamliel says they were not yomtivs, holidays, for the Jewish people, joyous days, except that compared to Yom Kippur and Chamisha Asa B'Av. Yom Kippur and the 15th of Av, where the single girls would go out dressed in borrowed garments so nobody was embarrassed or shamed from anybody else, and the single boys would go out and they would meet on the field. Never happened in the history that a mistake should be made, that a chet should be done, and that's how they made Shidduchim, and that's how Shidduchim happened. No Shadchanim, no this, no that, no $50,000 for any kind of funds and... Okay, never mind. Right? But that's how Shidduchim were made. So the Gemara says, and the Mishnah goes on, and the Mishnah says that they used to daven, the girls used to be mispalo, they used to say, Bachar sona einecha, lift your eyes, or re'eh, ma'ata bayrelecha, Look carefully with a good perspective what you're choosing for yourself. Al titen einecha binoy, don't look at beauty, but tein einecha b'mishpacha, look at family. Someone comes from a good family, they were raised well, it means they have Yerushamayim, they'll raise children well. Sheker achein v'hevel ayoyfi, isha yiras Hashem hitisala, we all know this, yeah? Later on, the Gemara says like this, Tana Rabbana, Yefifi yesh shebehem, the beautiful girls, mahayu aimreis, what would they say? They would say, tnu einechem liyoyfi. They would call out to the boys, look for pretty girls. For pretty. They would call out, they would daven in the face, they would call out, tnu einechem liyoyfi. Well, that's what they would say. They would say, beauty, she'ena isha ela liyoyfi, miyuchasas shebehem. The girls who came from good stock, from good families, from a good upbringing, mahayu aimreis, what would they say? They would say, tnu einechem lemishpacha. You gotta look for a good family, because you want children, you wanna raise good children, look for a good family. The comely ones, the homely girls. What did they say? Mahoyu Aimreis. What did they say? They would say, Ku mikhem l'shem shamayim. You should get married for the sake of heaven. What else could they say? Ku mikhem l'shem shamayim. You should get married for the sake of heaven. Ubilvad. However, sheta'atrunu b'zehuvim. But you should bedeck us with beautiful gold jewelry. What? What? And I once heard from the Shiva Rabbi Chaim Levine about 30 years ago. Beautiful, his own pshat, but it's such a beautiful pshat. He says, you think it's a little bit chutzpahdik, a little audacious? You know? So the beautiful one said, look for beauty. The mishpacha said, look for mishpacha. The comely ones said, you should get married to Shem Shemayim. But, providing you bedeck us with a lot of gold jewelry. Don't you think you're asking a little too much? So Shiva said, beautiful, mwah! Masa Kidvash. The beautiful girls, what were they relying on to get a shidduch? Their beauty. The ones with mishpacha, what were they relying on? Mishpacha. The mechuvara shebehem, what were they relying on? The Rabbeinu Shel Olam. They knew the shidduch comes from the Eibishta. And if it comes from the Eibishta, there's nothing short of what you can't ask for. If we understood that it comes from the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, that there's no limits to what you can ask for. Ubelvad, you want to marry us? You better bring a lot of gold with you. Bring up Eivishta. They're going to marry L'shem Shemayim for the sake of heaven. Ubelvad Shiyatun. I can't tell you how many stories in Shaduchim. Many of you know stories. I can't tell you personal stories that we have. Unbelievable. The Rabbeinu Shalom orchestrates, and the more you rely on the Rabbeinu Shalom, listen to me carefully. I'll get thrown out for this, but I'm telling you. The more you rely on the Rabbeinu Shalom, the less effort you make and the more you focus, you put your effort into talking to the Eibishter, the quicker the Shidduch comes. I'm telling you. The more you really rely on the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, the quicker the Shidduch comes. Talk about it a little bit more if you want to do that. Now let's go to the opposite. The opposite is, let's go back to Yosef. He forgot him. He asked the question. That seems unnatural. He just got out of prison. The guy just got him out, right? Well, he told him what was going to happen. How did he forget him? Clearly, this was orchestrated from above. The Rabbeinu Shalom made him forget. Why did he make him forget? What was the purpose of making him forget? This is a Chofetz Chaim that I'd like to share with you, but it's a little bit scary, but we'll share it anyway. We know the story with Hagar. Hagar was sent away. Sarah sent Hagar away together with Yishmael. Hagar actually ran twice. Once she ran away, and a Malach met her, and the Malach said, "Where are you running?" And she said, "I'm running away from my master." Oh, yeah, I skipped the piece with Yaakov. I gotta go back. Yaakov Avinu, we'll talk about Shidduchim. Yaakov Avinu, when he went to find his Shidduch, when he went to find Rachel for his Shidduch, so by Yetzer Yaakov, so the Medrash says that when Yaakov left, he said a capital Tehillim. What capital Tehillim did he say? He said, Esa Einai Elehorim Me'ayin Yavoi Ezri. I lift my eyes to the mountains, from where will come my Ezri, my salvation. What else is Ezer? Ezer Kenegdoi. Ezer means a spouse, my opposite, my partner. Says the Medrash, Yaakov Avinu said a tefillah. Esa eni al ahorim, I lift my eyes to the mountain. Me'ayin yovei Ezri, where will my shidduch come from? What was his problem? His problem was Eliezer, Eved Avi, Eliezer, the servant of my father, when he went to look for Rivka for a shidduch, for Yitzchak for a shidduch to get Rivka, he had 10 camels loaded down with gifts and gold and alagutas achen. Me, I'm a pauper. I've got nothing. What do I have to offer? Eliphaz robbed me, if you know the Medrash probably, Eliphaz robbed him on the way. He had nothing, he was a pauper. He said, that's it, I got nothing, I have nothing to offer for a shidduch. May I in Yovei Ezri, where's my shidduch going to come? What? Ma, ani mavit sori min bari? He caught himself. Am I losing my faith in my Creator? Ezri, nu, meim, Hashem, oisei shemayim v'oretz. My Ezri, my shidduch, my Ezer, comes from the Eibishter, oisei shemayim v'oretz. What am I doing? Explains the Beis Halevi, Yaakov wasn't questioning how he can get a shidduch without money. He was just wondering how it's going to work out. He knows he's broke, right? He knows the Eibishter brings him his zivug, but he was just curious how was it going to work out, considering that he has no money. The mechuvares shebehem, right? He was just trying to he trusted in the Eibishter. He was just trying to figure out derech hateva. Naturally, how's it going to work? What kind of hishtadlus is he going to have to make? But he caught himself, and he said, "Man, imavit sorry mimbari. Am I losing my faith in my Creator? Ezri, my shidduch, my yem Hashem, is shemayim ba'oras." What's the end of the story? He got to Haran. He found shepherds around the water. He said to them, "Do any of you know Lavan?" They said, "Yes." And then what happened? No. Who came down? There comes your wife. Whoa. Rachel came. Look what happened. He chapped himself. He said, "Wait a second, I'm losing betochen. Ezri mi Hashem is shemayim ba'aretz." He gets to Haran. He finds shepherds. He says, "Do any of you know Lavan?" "Yes." And here comes your wife. Mamish. That's what happened. Rachel came out to greet him. That's Yata Dishmai. Now let's go to the other side. What happens if you put in too much hishtadlus? Hagar ran away twice. Once she ran away and a malach met her. And the malach told her, "Why are you running away?" And she said, "She's running away from her Kirtay. She's having a hard problem." So the malach told her, "Don't worry, your children will increase. Yishmael is going to be a great nation. You won't be able to count them. There'll be so many." Fine, she goes back home. Later, she doesn't run away. Sarah sends her away because Yishmael is a bad influence for Yitzchak. Sarah says to Avram, "Get rid of her." Avram says, "Not a good idea. He was too compassionate." The Rabbani Shlom says, "Whatever Sarah tells you, listen." So Avram sends off Hagar and sends off Yishmael. What happens? They wander in the desert. They get lost, seemingly get lost. And they run out of water. Yishmael is sick. He's dehydrating. He has no water. So the pasuk says that the water, Vayikolu Hamayim and Achemes, the water was no more. Vatashlich es hayelet tachar achar hasichim. And she threw the lad under one of the bushes. And she moved away like an arrow shot. How far an arrow flies? What is it? 1,000 feet? I have no idea. She said, "I don't want to see the death of my son." And she sat opposite and she cried. "You know, my poor son, he's dying." "Your poor son, he's dying, so why don't you sit by his side if he's dying?" "Well, there's nothing I could do." One more time. A mother has a child who's dying and there's nothing that she can do. So instead of sitting by her bed, by his bedside, she moves away so she doesn't hear him cry. And the more he cries, the pasuk says, the more she moves away. The Rabbani Shlom hears the child crying. Why doesn't he hear the mother crying? Because her crying wasn't sincere. Her crying was self-pity. If she was sincere, she would have stayed by Yishmael's bedside and she would have cried for Yishmael. But she didn't. She cried for herself. And she moved away. And as Rashi says, the more he cried, the more she moved away. The Malach comes out and calls to Hagar. And he says, "Don't worry. Hashem heard the cries of your child." Not yours, but your child's cries. Could have heard both. Okay, not yours, but heard your child's cries. Basher husham. Kumi. Get up. Si'iyas hanar. Pick up the lad. V'hachaziki es yodech boich. And hold your hand fast to him. Why? Ki ligoy god lasimenu. Because Hashem says, "I'll make him to a great nation." I'm not sure what that was all about. If you want to cure him, cure him. But alright. V'yifkach elikim eseineha. Hashem opens up Hagar's eyes. V'tere be'er mayim. And she sees a well of water. V'telech v'tamali esacham es mayim. She fills up the water. And she gives Yishmael to drink. And Yishmael lives. So, did he create a well for her? What does the pasuk say? Hashem created a well for her? No. It says that Bayifkach Elekim Eseineho. He opened her eyes. He didn't create Vatera. And she saw Be'er Moyim, that there was a well of water there, right? So that's a created well now, or the well was always there? No? The well was there. Hashem opened her eyes. So what does it mean? She went with closed eyes? I can't find any water. My eyes are closed. What does that mean? What happened over here? And why did she have to pick up the child and hold him strong because Hashem will make him a great nation? Listen to this Chofetz Chaim. It's frightening, but we'll share it. It's the Chofetz Chaim. What happened? She saw her son was dying of thirst. She threw him under the bushes. Sarah, when she heard her son was dying, she died of fright. Hagar, when she heard her son was dying, she moved away so she shouldn't have to suffer from listening to him cry. But whatever it is, she threw him under the bushes and she moved away. What are you concerned with? He's going to die? Didn't Hashem already tell you, Ki v'goy gadol asimenu, in the last parsha? Didn't we say that pasuk? Didn't the Malach say, Harbe arbe yezarech v'lo yisofer ma'oid, that Yishmael will be a great nation, will be able to count him? What happened over here? She lost faith. She lost her betochen and her trust in Hashem. So you know what happened? Chofetz Chaim, not me. The well that was there, that could have saved her, Derech HaTeva, the Rabbanu Shalom blinded her and wouldn't let her see it. Amar Reb Binyamin, Hakol Becheskes Sumin, Ad Sheyiftechu HaKadosh Baruch Hu Esayneihem. Everybody is blind till the Rabbanu Shalom opens your eyes. You walk with the Rabbanu Shalom, he keeps your eyes open. You see all kinds of things. Teva, Lamalam and Ateva, you don't even know what it is. It could be a miracle, you just don't know about it. He created it before you turned the corner. This well was there all the time. Derech HaTeva, she could have saved Yishmael. She could, if she would have walked a little bit looking for Rabbanu Shalom, I know you promised me that Yishmael is going to be so great, there's going to be so many of them, you won't be able to count them. Now he's dying of thirst. I'm sure that's not going to happen because you promised he's going to be a great nation. So I'm going to look for water. But instead of doing that, and she would have found the well. But instead of doing that, she despaired. She threw him under a tree. I don't want to see him die. She moved away, and that's it. And she's crying in self-pity. So the well, which was right next to her, which she would have seen, but because she didn't have betochen, the Rabbanu Shalom blinded her and didn't let her see it. After she was mechazik her betochen, he opened her eyes. Where? Says the Chofetz Chaim, that's what the Malach told her. You want to save Yishmael? You need to reconnect your betochen in the Rabbanu Shalom. Kumi si'iyas hanar. Lift up the child. Hechaziki es yodech boy. Hold your hand fast to him. He's not going anywhere. Why? Ki legoi gadol asimenu. I promised you he would be a great nation. You lost your betochen? Re-energize your faith and your trust in the Rabbanu Shalom. Ki legoi gadol asimenu. And then you'll have a Yeshua, and then she was able, Hashem opened up her eyes and she saw the well. It's a pachat, but it's the same thing with Yosef. Yosef said two words that he wasn't supposed to say, so the Rabbanu Shalom gave the Sarah Mashkin amnesia. He had amnesia. Who gave him amnesia? The Rabbanu Shalom. Why? Because he put his trust in Rehoboth. A momentary lapse, but in this momentary lapse, he put his trust into this person, so that's it. He lost his Yeshua. My wife showed me a beautiful story. I'll end with this. A beautiful story this Shabbos about the Lomjer Rosh Yeshiva who came to the Chofetz Chaim, said he needed a Mashgiach for his Yeshiva. So the Chofetz Chaim said, I have a suggestion. This young man, this fellow, me in the Yeshiva, he is worthy of being a Mashgiach. He's great. He's got all the qualities. The Talmud Chacham is a Yerushalayim. He's wonderful. So the Lomjer Rosh Yeshiva said, okay, good, we're going to take him as Mashgiach. It was Erev Yontif. He figured he'll talk to this fellow after Yontif. He put it off till after Yontif. He went back home, whatever it was. Chalamoid, or immediately after Yontif, somebody delivers a letter to the Lomjer Rav. A letter from the Chofetz Chaim. He opened it up. He saw the date. He realized the Chofetz Chaim wrote it on Chalamoid. Must be very important if the Chofetz Chaim had to write on Chalamoid. It must have been a Dvar Mitzvah. The letter from the Chofetz Chaim said, Do not take this man as the Mashgiach in your yeshiva. He threw himself. Okay? Chofetz Chaim said so. He got on a train, he ran to Radin. He went to Radin, he came to the Chofetz Chaim, he said, what happened? Chofetz Chaim said, after you left, this young man came to me, and he was pouring out, I'm just telling you the story the way it is, he was pouring out his heart bitterly, bitterly, that he doesn't have parnasa, that he doesn't have livelihood, and he was crying and pouring out his heart to me. I was mechazikim, I told him the Baruch Shalom will help, so on and so forth. But the Chofetz Chaim said, somebody who could cry bitterly that they don't have parnasa, if that's their place in life where they are now, they're not at the place to be a mashgiach to have an influence on others. They're not at the place to be a role model to be a mashgiach for others. If that's the place where he is, he can't be a mashgiach. Now think about it for a minute. If this young man would not have gone to the Chofetz Chaim, and he would have said, the Rabbanu Shalom is going to help me, I don't know where the parnasa is coming from, but I trust in the Rabbanu Shalom, what would have happened after Yontif? Derech HaTeva, naturally. The Lomjer Rosh Yeshiva would have gone to him and said, I'd like you to be the Mashgiach in my yeshiva. He would have had a wonderful position, and he would have had parnasa. But because of his lack of emunah and betachin, it got snatched away from him. This is what the Beis Halevi teaches us. It's a very hard lesson, but the lesson's like this. Focus and remember that everything is in the hands of the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's no such thing as small things and big things. Everything is in the hand of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Sometimes we're lucky enough to see it. Sometimes we don't see it, but it's there and it's happening anyway. Sometimes later we find out about it. One short, quick story. Rifki and I were on our way, she told me not to say, don't say the story. Somebody else and I were on our way to Toronto to a chasana. That doesn't make sense. Rifki and I were on our way to Toronto to a chasana, I think it was a Webster chasana. And we got to the airport and they had this new system. They had a whole bunch of lines. You could pick whichever line you want to go through security. And you know Murphy's Law. Whichever line you pick, that's going to be the worst line. So we picked the first line. I said, let's just take the first line. It's Murphy's Law anyway. We waited 20 minutes till we kept moving forward. And all of a sudden, Rifki said, my wife says to me, she says, oh no, that's not a metal detector. That's one of those new X-ray machines. This is going back a while. It's one of those new X-ray machines. Oh, I don't want to go through an X-ray machine. Not a sneeze-dicky thing. I don't want to go through it. I said, listen, they asked her by first. Her by first said it's okay. Other person said it's okay. They don't see an image. There's a guy in a locked room. He doesn't see you. You don't see him. I'm not interested. Not a sneeze thing. I'm not going through the thing. I said, okay. I walk up to the front. I was like six people in front of me. I go up to the lady in front with the uniform and the microphone and the speaker and the thing, the police radio. And I said, listen, my wife does not want to go through the X-ray machine. Is it okay? Can she go through the metal detector, which is right here, like mamish 2 feet away, because there's a bunch of lines. She says, sure, there's no problem. I said, okay, great. But then she has to have a pat-down. I said, what does she have to have a pat-down for? Because she opts out of the X-ray machine. That's already a red flag. She has to have a pat-down. So I go back to my wife. I tell her, listen, you have to have a pat-down. I don't want a pat-down. If I don't want an X-ray, I don't want a pat-down. So not nice. Okay, nu, vastafen ton. Reach out to the Eibishter and ask, save me. Hatzilenu Hashem, save me from this matzah. We're moving forward. I'm the next guy in line. I, of course, want to go through an X-ray machine because I have an artificial hip. And if I go through the metal detector, I do get pat-down. So I say, okay, I'm going through the X-ray machine. Fine, X-ray machine. Now she has to make a choice. X-ray machine or pat-down. Which one is it? Which uncomfortable? All of a sudden, the woman said, what? Hello? What? She gets a call. Yeah? What? How long? Oh, 20 minutes? Oh, okay. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the fellow who does the X-rays in the X-ray room is going for his lunch break. For 20 minutes, all of you go to the metal detector. And now, no pat-down. Because she didn't choose to opt out, but the Eibishter orchestrated that. Isn't that a beautiful story? You think the story's over? It's not over. That's what I mean. You don't always see the Yad Hashem. I get to Toronto. I'm sitting at a table with David Tesler and Heshi Wangro and Achleis. I don't know who else was there. And I'm telling over the story. Look at the Hashgacha. My wife has such siyata d'shmaya. Mamish is a tzaddikus, and the Ribbono Shel Olam does her will. Mamish is a tzaddik goes by Kodesh Baruch Hu Mekayim. So Heshi Wangro turns to me and he says, I'll tell you, you want to know the rest of the story? I said, the rest of the story? That's the story. He says, no, there's more to the story. Okay, what's the rest of the story? He says, I was six guys behind you in line. Why? So, nothing, I was watching the events, I saw you go up there, you came back, this and that and that, and I saw when his wife turned to go into the machine, she started talking to her thing, okay, 20 minute break for lunch. And she sent your wife through the metal detector, and after your wife went through the metal detector, I think she said the next person also went through the metal detector, the guy behind you, and then all of a sudden she says, 1 second, oh what? Oh, you'll go in 20 minutes. Oh, okay. Okay, he's not going for lunch break now, he's going to everybody back into the X-ray machine. That's the end of the story. Just for her. And I think maybe the next guy. And then everybody else back at you. What's the lesson? If you walk with the Ribbono Shel Olam and you trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam, there's nothing too big and there's nothing too small. You walk with the Eibishter, he orchestrates everything. After all, the world is his. We exist because of him. Everything, inanimate, animate, it's only the Eibishter. It's no tircha for him to orchestrate. The more betachin you have, the less ishtadlus you have to make. If you get to the point that you understand that, you make minimal effort. If you're a 9-to-5er and you're ready to go home because you have a seder or you want to be with your family or whatever it might be, and the phone rings at 5 o'clock, oi, I see the name on the caller ID. This is a guy I've been trying to get a hold of. I can make a very big deal over here. You have betachin in the Eibishter. If your ishtadlus is now 9-to-5, don't make it 9-to-5:05. Leave the phone ring. If you're supposed to get it, you'll get it. The Eibishter will bring it to you. The Shidduch, the Parnasa, the Yeshua. Walk with the Eibishter, it will come. If you think that you have to answer the phone, because I have to make a shtadlus. How much is that? I have to try. People think I have to make a shtadlus until I drop at the end of the day. That's not a shtadlus. His shtadlus is to cover up the nes gully, the open miracle, to cover it up. So it doesn't look like months falling from Shemayim. You're making a shtadlus. Some people's shtadlus work better, some less. Depends on your betochen. Says the Beis Halevi, if you make more hishtadlus than you should, if we put more effort out in our minds, in our intellect, in our neshama, we recognize and we know that the Eibishter does everything, and we still insist on he needs my help. God helps those who help themselves, such a crumb of art. But he needs my help, says the Beis Halevi, the Einish is, you'll need the hishtadlus. You'll have to put in extra help. You have to stay 2 extra years in Shayim. Shidduchim, Parnasa, Yeshuas. You walk with the Eibishter walks with us. In the Kodesh.